This is my journey, inspired one story at a time. A library of leaders was created. It began as a journey to learn. As time went on, it began to grow. All it needed was a platform, and this podcast was created to listen, to inspire, to share. I am a storyteller, and this is my journey. Welcome to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. I'm your host, Steve Anderson, and today our guest is Keaton Ray. Keaton is the co-founder and COO of Movement X. She graduated from Duke University in 2014 with her doctorate in physical therapy. She has gone on to receive multiple certified specialist degrees. In 2017, she was named an emerging leader by the American Physical Therapy Association. She lives in Portland, Oregon, and enjoys being outdoors in the great Pacific Northwest. And I think in this interview, you're going to feel her passion and feel her optimism. And she just relates some good parallels between the PT world, and she gets in and shares with us of a little bit of an acting journey that she's on, which is exciting. And I just think that she really shows you how infectious and how driven you can be and put it in the right direction, and great things can happen. So this is a great interview. Keaton's just fun to talk to and fun to be around. And so I hope you enjoy it. So let's just dive right into it. Hi, Keaton. Welcome to the program. I'm excited to have you on today.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve. I'm excited.
So let's just kind of start with how did you get exposed and interested in the physical therapy profession?
Oh, I have a pretty typical story for the PT. Nothing, you know, unique or overly inspiring for my entrance, but I was a youth athlete, a gymnast, which is very demanding on the body. And when I was 12, I actually herniated a thoracic disc while jumping on a trampoline. It was pretty rare for that thoracic level herniation. And went to yoga, just like a traditional yoga, nothing PT related, and it was okay. Went to acupuncture, and then eventually ended up in physical therapy. And through doing physical therapy, I also improved my performance as a gymnast and healed my back. So that was my initial exposure. And then just being an active individual and having that positive experience naturally went the route through high school as a athletic trainer for my high school, and then college, and then PT school.
And how? Tell me a little bit more about your gymnastics experience. So, did you continue through high school and into college with that?
Not into college. I ended up breaking my ankle at 15, or maybe I was 16 years old in high school. So about sophomore year of high school, and then that ended my gymnastics career. But I did go on to coach gymnastics through college.
So I know that you were involved in a student conclave as a student at Duke. And what leadership experience did you gain while serving as a national officer for that organization?
Yeah, well, it's really interesting because, you know, if you were just to look at my resume, you would probably see a type A overachiever person with too much on their extracurricular list on their resume. But I didn't have any formal leadership experience until my first day at graduate school at Duke for PT school. So I was never involved in any sort of student government or any sort of like club leadership in college. And then I moved to Durham, North Carolina. I went to school at Duke. And because I was there 3 months early before PT school started, I put together a list of books that the students should look into having before they get to school. And because I was the first person to organize something, on the second week of school, they elected me student class president.
Nice.
And I never, ever held a leadership position. So to be Duke class president was kind of a shock. But then I realized, hey, I'm actually pretty good at organizing and speaking to a group. So that's when I started looking at other leadership opportunities outside of Duke. So I started to look at the APTA. And that's when I applied to become a student on the Student Assembly Board of Directors for the APTA. So actually kind of a like deep dive into leadership very quickly.
Yeah. And you said that you were felt like you had some skill in that area, and sounds like you enjoyed it.
I did. I think what I don't think I necessarily loved, contrary to what most of my colleagues now would say, I don't think I loved the organizational component of it, you know, like the day-to-day tactical things. But what I realized, if I can get my Duke class really excited about something, then I can mobilize people towards something. So one example is the Duke Medical School was hosting a Learn About Primary Care medical practice. They were just hosting like an open house, the primary care department. So I made an announcement about it. I spoke to the class about how important primary care collaboration is with physical therapy. And then we had like 40 of our 60 classmates show up to this PCP gathering. And there were like four other people there from the entire medical school. So we had like all these PT students at this primary care gathering. And I just realized, wow, I can really get people excited about stuff. So that's what I loved about it.
That's awesome. Now, you stated, in fact, you just gave a What I Believe speech at the Graham Sessions this year. And you said that you have tried from day one to get out of the traditional clinical practice. And were you surprised with what the day-to-day life of a physical therapist was, you know, once you were employed in clinical practice?
You know, I had a slightly non-traditional route into clinical practice to begin with. So I don't think I had like standard expectations. And what I mean by that is when I got that class president role and then I became involved in the student assembly, I very quickly realized that my interest was more than just the one-on-one patient care and that I wanted to affect outcomes of society from a higher level. So if I could, you know, just throwing up random examples in my mind back then, if I could work for a healthcare consulting company or an insurance company or an outcomes company or, you know, a software company, I could, over the course of my career, affect more lives than just doing one-on-one patient care. Now, obviously, one-on-one patient care is absolutely crucial for, you know, for the big picture, but I didn't see myself doing it. So when I graduated from physical therapy school, I actually did not apply to clinical jobs. I just took about, you know, maybe 2 to 3 months off and started looking at other types of opportunities for a newly graduated PT student to go into, like some of the ones I just mentioned. But fortunately, at a conference at House of Delegates in North Carolina, I believe in 2014, I met a private practice owner who lived in Portland, who invited me to come study with them until I took my boards. And I ended up staying with that practice for 4 more years and getting my OCS and becoming a certified clinical instructor and doing all sorts of other specific education. And I put myself through that 4 to 5 year journey because before I became a leader in the profession, I wanted to make sure I was a really good clinician first. So I was a little bit surprised by what the day-to-day was, but my perspective was different going in from the start.
It's really interesting when you take that approach, as you say, the non-traditional approach, because, you know, I've talked on this program before with other guests that, you know, PTs in healthcare executive level positions and other areas of healthcare, in my opinion, could only be positive, but so few PTs go in that direction. And I'm wondering if you felt like you were judged by your peers when you talked about that and talked about going in that direction. Did they make you feel like that you were selling out or weren't doing what you went to school to learn how to do?
So I think probably not by my peers by any means. I think that the older generation, you know, maybe some faculty or some more seasoned clinical instructors, when, you know, I'm this young gun coming out of school saying, I don't want to practice PT. I want to do something different. You know, I think there were some rolled eyes in the beginning. And so I actually am really glad that I listened to some mentorship from older clinicians and went through that clinical component. But for the most part, everybody in my life and my career has been so extremely supportive of me going a non-traditional route. I, in fact, couldn't even have taken the risk of quitting my job, opening my own business, and not a traditional business either, something that's much more risky. And I just couldn't have done it without the support of everyone. Even the company I left, the private practice I worked for, was extremely supportive. So I just feel very lucky to have that.
That's great. Well, let's talk about burnout a little bit.
What
does that feel like for you, and what steps or maybe risks have you taken to avoid its pitfalls?
Yeah, I think there's a couple different types of burnout. I think every single one of us listening to this podcast, PTs, healthcare providers included, can relate to clinical burnout. And the clinic I worked at that I spoke of was actually a really well set up clinic. We had 45 minutes, one-on-one appointment times, no PTAs or assistants who were taking over care or managing that we were managing. And so really, really high quality patient care. But even with that, you know, my first patient started at 7 a.m. and ended at 1 p.m. It was back to back to back, no breaks, no water breaks, barely time for bathroom break, no snack breaks. You have an hour long lunch where you do documentation, call doctors, catch up desperately. And then you're back at it from 2 to 6. And then from 6 to 7:30 or 8, you're catching up on documentation and just, you know, trying to survive. You get home and you start all over the next day. And so for me, what I realized, the biggest component of my burnout is I didn't evaluate going into PT school or during PT school what my natural ecosystem is, right? Like, I'm a very fluid person. So I work best at different times of the day on different days of the week. And I like the ability to sit at my computer and have this deep time and get creative and kind of be alone. And even though I am extroverted, I do really thrive in introverted time. And so being in clinical care where you have this just constant stream of people, it didn't fit my natural flow. And so I burnt out because I didn't design my career around what I actually thrive in. So I found out pretty quickly that clinical care was a recipe for burnout in the traditional environment.
Sure. You know? No, that's really interesting. Daniel Pink wrote a book called When, and he talks a lot about, you know, that different times during the day, different people are better. And there, you know, there's morning people, there's night people, there's, you know, different times. And if you try and fight that, the way you're internally wired, so to speak, you can really, you know, frustrate yourself and reach that burnout. So that's a really interesting perspective you had on that.
Yeah. And I know clinicians who operate very, very well in that structure, as they love the idea of having the same thing at the same time every day and going home at the same time and having that predictable schedule. But I am not that person. I thrive in a little bit more of chaos and a little bit less structure. And so, and I'm also not a morning person by any sense of the name. So I really am doing a lot better now where I still am in clinical care. I treat about 12 hours a week and I can design my schedule around when I'm optimized for patients. I will not see a patient anymore before 10:30 a.m. It's just not going to be good for the patient. I guarantee it. So I'm in a much better situation now, but you're absolutely right with that.
You know, are PT's expectations, do you think, too low or too high? Or sometimes I feel like maybe we're a little more arrogant than we actually think we are when we look at what effect we have on the world and our patients. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you listen to my What I Believe speech, you'll know that I strongly believe that I think PTs are a little bit too arrogant. Listen, every PT I know is a very empathetic person who wants to help people. But we get very dogmatic about what we do, right? PT is the only way chiropractic is wrong. PT is the only way we shouldn't send people to massage first when they're in pain, you know, and this is a generalization, but that tends to be the theme. Very protective over our practice acts. But the truth is you look at the percent of the population with neuromusculoskeletal conditions that we're actually targeting, and it's like 9%, if that. So there is 91, 92% of people out there with pain, with chronic issues that PT has the capacity to treat in and out of the confines of insurance, and we're just not targeting them. And I do believe that that's because we've created this ecosystem of PT where we're in these uninspiring clinics that are driven by productivity, that are burning out their physical therapists, that are making minimal overhead or has large overhead with minimal revenue. And we're just squeezing ourselves dry. And it's not just affecting our ability to have private practices and financial stability for our PTs. It's actually affecting the patient experience. And if the patient doesn't want to come to PT, they're going to go to stretch labs or chiropractic or massage or whatever. And so, I think we're a little too full of ourselves sometimes.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Now, you've started your own business, which is called Movement X. And, I mean, you're just not opening up a clinic for you to work in. And, this is a business that wants to become a national player. So what excites you about that? And, what scares you about it?
Well, everything excites me and everything scares me in a way. But no, just kidding about that latter part. You know, I think the advice I give to anyone starting their own business or starting their own startup or venture is that you can't think too much about the long term. You absolutely have to have a vision of what you achieve. But if you overwhelm yourself with the details day to day of what it takes to grow a business, you're going to have analysis paralysis and not go anywhere. So the fear, you kind of just have to be fearless and a little bit naive to go this big and start your own business. But what excites me about it is it's a similar philosophy to that mindset of the one-on-one patient care. You know, I saw myself affecting more lives than just the one-on-one that I could over a course of a career. And with Movement X, we don't have location boundaries or clinical boundaries. So wherever movement happens, whether that's at your home, whether it's at the park with your grandkids, whether it's at your doctor's office, your workplace, commuting on the bus, wherever movement happens, we as physical therapists have the capacity to help you improve that component of your life. So why do we confine ourselves to a clinic where people have to spend their busy day getting to the clinic, waiting in line, et cetera, et cetera? So if we can put PTs across the US and eventually worldwide, right directly at the place where movement happens, I believe we can improve the patient experience and improve outcomes for the health of society as well. So that's what's getting me really excited, is really we don't have limitations in how we can grow or where we can grow.
So you are going to where the patient is in their environment and helping them learn how to move freer and better in those environments that are their day-to-day.
Exactly. Yep. And in addition to actually going to the patient, you know, one example would be I had my very first patient with Movement X years ago is a 40-year-old woman who had a knee replacement, and she's a Krav Maga instructor, so Israeli street fighting. So this lady is highly capable, but she was terrified to go back to her Krav Maga classes because of her knee replacement. So we worked on it together in her home, and then when she was ready to transition back to the gym, I signed up for a month of Krav Maga classes. And our PT session, wow. Our PT sessions were actually at the fighting gym, like me watching her, you know, do her fighting, knowing nothing about Krav Maga, and say, no, don't do that. Or, okay, yeah, do that. That's great. How does that feel? And so helping her integrate back into her community. That's just one example. Another example is Josh D'Angelo, my business partner. He had a patient who I believe he was having knee problems, and he was in his 80s and really passionate about getting back to skiing. And so Josh went with him to his orthopedic visits. He went to him when he was in the hospital. He was in his home. They could have even gone to the mountain and gone skiing together. I don't know that they did, but they could have. So really just integrated to where movement happens. And then in addition, we've also set up clinics across all of our locations where we're collaborating with CrossFit gyms and collaborating with regenerative medicine physicians to actually set up little satellite clinics across the U.S. as well. If patients don't have a place to access care in their home or at their work, they can come to us.
So how long have you been doing this now?
Forever.
When did you start the business then?
So Josh and I had a phone call on September, let's see, maybe it was late August 2016. And Josh and I have done a lot of work together with various nonprofits like Move Together, and we served on the student assembly together. So we were constantly in contact, just brainstorming about the profession and coming up with ideas. And we came up with the idea for Movement X, and instantly I hung up the phone. I went home and told my husband, Stu, and I said, I'm going to eventually quit my job and Josh and I are going to start this venture. And then I, the next day, signed up for all of these business classes, Business 101, Googled everything. And then went down to part-time at my current job just like a year later. So really the idea percolated for about a year. And then after that, a year later, we were finally ready to pull the trigger, quit our jobs and go full-time with Movement X. So the ISAR official start date was April 2018.
Okay. And now what do you think the biggest surprise for you was? You know, you're in this now, you are predicting the way it's going to be, and you have some strategy of what you're going to do, and now you're in it, hook, line, and sinker. What surprised you most about?
About the whole process leading up to this moment?
Now that you're in the business, you know, you're trying to make this work, and you're trying to make it happen, and so now that you're living it day to day, what has surprised you about it?
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody says you need focus to succeed. That's obvious, right? You need to focus on something for it to grow. But as an early business owner with a highly just optimistic view on everything, you think that if you build it, they will come. if you build a business, if you build an idea, people are just going to organically find out about you and rush to your door, and you're going to be an overnight success. And I think we operated on that mindset for at least a year. And what we realized quickly is that there's so much more involved in building a business and a culture and an infrastructure for growth that doesn't involve people running to you, knocking down your door, asking for opportunities. So there's these lulls in business where, okay, you come up with this great idea, you come up with the vision and the language, and then what do you need to do to actually start to grow that business, right? That is that lull that I think a lot of businesses fall off and people quit and said entrepreneurship isn't for them. It's if you can stick through some of those lulls and figure out, okay, how do we actually get this idea to market and start to put some structure and focus to its growth, that you start to see the success. And that's really, really, really hard to do. And so I'll have to give a lot of credit to the mentors we've built around us and Josh as our CEO and keeping us really focused and not deviating. Because another thing that is hard to do is when you come up with an idea and then you launch it and people don't come running to you immediately, what people do is then change the idea and expect the outcome to be the same. People will come running to you. So if you really believe in your initial idea and people aren't running, it's not because it's not successful. You just have to continue your strategy and push that boulder up the hill.
Yeah, that's you said that very well. You know, it gets back to what we talked about earlier, kind of in the sense that, you know, myself included, you know, most PTs are like, well, of course this makes sense. And why wouldn't people just want to do this and see the value like we see it and whatever? And I think we sometimes scratch our head and say, why aren't people coming in flocks to us?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of the what I believe speech that we talked about too is, you know, I think we get a little too confident in our clinical care. I think PTs have done a really good job with being able to be in network with insurance companies and be able to demonstrate our outcomes through evidence-based practice. But in most of the PTs I speak with, most of the continuing education courses, even the national conferences like CSM, it's 90% clinical based outcomes, right? That's where a lot of that leadership is. And it's super important, don't get me wrong. However, the second the patient walks into your clinic, there's a research article that I can share with you later that says the patient makes a decision about whether or not they're going to get better within 1 second of seeing their healthcare provider. So the second you open that door to the waiting room and introduce yourself, the patient is already, their outcomes are already affected. So there's so much to the patient experience that I don't think we do a good job with in physical therapy. That ultimately is going to improve how many people come see us, but also improve outcomes, which is what we're so desperate to prove, right?
Right, right. Yeah, very interesting. Now, you have a really great group of partners in the business. What does your interaction with them do to kind of light your fire?
So my group, I'll give, we have such an incredible team, and, you know, to give everyone so much credit, we've been at this for full time about 3.5 years now. And that's it feels like a lifetime, but it's a very short period of time in the grand scheme of business. We have Josh D'Angelo, who is our CEO, Scott McAfee, who is our chief marketing officer, and Fred Gilbert, who is our chief people officer. And Josh and I came up with the idea in 2016, percolated on it for a few years. And then we just started calling everybody in our network because of APTA and our leadership and our involvement. We have a very expansive network, which we're very fortunate for. And Fred and Scott, being entrepreneurially mindsetted themselves, they just hooked onto the idea. They hooked onto to the same passions that Josh and I had. And Fred actually moved from Alabama to Washington, D.C. And Scott moved from California to Washington, D.C. to start the business. And so they just uprooted their lives with no guarantee of salary, no guarantee of having a patient load ready to go, and started this business with us. And so we've been working together for the past 3 years to really grow it to what it is. And there's no way any one of us could have done this independently.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, you were selected as an emerging leader in the PT world in 2017. By the American Physical Therapy Association. So what does that mean to you, and how do you hope to develop or leverage that accolade?
I don't know if I'm going to have a great answer for this. This is funny. This is probably a personal thing I need to work on, but when I get accolades or awards or honors, I don't get very excited about them. And I don't maybe I need to slow down and appreciate the honor. But to me, it seems silly because yes, I'm involved in a lot of things and I work really hard and I'm trying to build this company to affect physical therapy outcomes. But when I look at my track record, I haven't achieved that much. Right? I haven't done what even you've done, Steve, or so many people that you've interviewed have done. And so I just have so much more on the logbook that I want to accomplish that the awards are just like it's just a secondary thing. So it's a huge honor to be labeled as an emerging leader, but I want the award that actually says like, okay, you've done it. You've accomplished, you've changed the world. You can retire now. I'll wait for that one to celebrate.
Okay. Well, let's look at this. Define success. When will you know that you have reached it?
That's a really good question. You know, I think I will feel successful when I can take a step back from Movement X and look at the impact the business has had on really two factors. One, patients and society. So I really would love to move the needle forward in creating a healthier society. Now that's really hard to measure, especially directly as it ties to the business. But if we can get the business to a scale where we're actually moving the needle, that will be success. That's the one side of the table, the patient side. On the other side of the treatment table is the provider. And right now we have about 35 to 40 physical therapists working with us. And I can honestly say I will be satisfied if their lives are better. There are so many incredible PTs who are, whether it's struggling financially or struggling with burnout or struggling with an employer, that if we can improve the lives of PTs in general, we're going to have a stronger profession. So if I can look, if we've improved the health of society and we've improved the lives of our physical therapists, I'll call that a win.
Yeah, that's great. Now, I hear you're taking some acting classes. Now, how does that feel, or how does that feed your soul, and why did you choose to do that?
Oh, I have a big smile on my face. It's so funny to hear you ask me this in a PT podcast, because I actually withheld it from the PT world for a while because it's so unique, so different, kind of off the beaten path. But to be honest, I was just craving something completely different than what healthcare business could bring. It was during COVID that I sat down and thought, I'm doing healthcare. I think I've done it relatively successfully as a clinician and I'm working on business and had relative success to the state in business. How can I stretch my brain in a completely new fashion? My mom is in the movie industry. My brother is a musician. My dad is a filmmaker. Everybody's creative. Everybody is, right-brained, I believe. And yes. From day one, I've gone science and business, which is not that you can't be creative there, but it's not necessarily a creative field. So I looked into singing lessons and realized nobody wanted me to do that at all, especially my husband. I wasn't super interested in instruments or music. And then I decided, well, maybe I'll do some art, some drawing. And then I didn't want anyone to be stuck with all my, mediocre paintings. And so acting kind of felt like a natural next step, especially since I've done a decent amount of public speaking. And I took my first acting class and I just fell in love with it. It was just so natural to me. It was one of the first things as an adult that I just became all consumed with and just really like my soul aligned with acting. And honestly, I think a lot of it comes from, I'm sure all PTs and healthcare providers can relate to this. You sit in front of, 12 patients a day, if not more, and you are studying for their behaviors for unspoken truths. Is this person telling you something, but are they actually sad underneath? Is this person anxious? Is this person happy? Is there new good news at their job affecting how their ankle is healing? There's so many parallels in the human experience that you can pull. So we're all evaluating characters every single day. And really what acting is just character study and then being able to adopt people's emotions. So I didn't find the parallels between acting and healthcare all that different, to be honest. And so now it's just a hobby that I'm just adoring and starting to grow a little bit more organically.
So where do you think it's going to lead? to give me some things you're thinking about or maybe you've done that they're exciting.
Sure. Thanks for asking. Well, I think my whole business, my core team would drop dead if they heard me say I was moving to Hollywood and becoming a famous actress. It's funny. It's really funny. You tell people in your life you're quitting your job to start a business and people kind of smile and nod. you tell people you're taking one acting class and they ask when you're moving to Hollywood. It's a really funny juxtaposition. But no, I mean, to date, I've done a few just small films. I'm really passionate about working on projects that I believe in. So we just did one with a nonprofit called the Black Parent Initiative about social justice and the Black experience with police abuse. And so I actually played a defense lawyer defending a policeman who had killed a Black man. And it wasn't just a film that I was acting in just to, you know, make money. I was truly learning the experience of the individuals, the BIPOC community, making the film. And so those are the type of projects I'm really interested in working on. And I did a few little commercials here and there, but that was the best one so
that's
far.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, and so do you think that you're more of a right brain thinker than a left brain thinker?
I think I'm starting to grow that muscle a little bit for sure. I would actually say I take a pretty business approach to acting, which is why I think I've had success in the short term, is that I can tap into that creative side when I'm doing character study and when I'm in my classes and working with my acting coach. I really do get creative. But my approach to learning lines and applying to gigs and preparing for auditions is very business-like, which is actually, I think, why I've been able to book so many roles in such a short period of time.
You know, it's really interesting when you think about it, because I've said this many times before on this program, is that, you know, to get into PT school, it's very achievement oriented. It's very analytical. You know, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to check off the boxes, and you do this and you do that. And so I think we're patterned to do that, which maybe we lose some of that right brain side of creativity in the process. And so I'm just real intrigued that, you know, it sounds like, you know, you're a go-getter and you know how to achieve things. And so you know how to do that. But there's that hidden creative side that needed to come out.
Yeah, I think it's so important for anyone dealing with burnout is if you're dealing with burnout, your only option is to do something different. Because if you keep doing the same thing, you're not going to, it's not just suddenly going to be better. Right. And so I've never been burned out in the truest sense with Movement X or with business or with leadership, but you do get tired and you get a little bit overwhelmed and sometimes you lose perspective. And so to really snap yourself out of that and be able to keep that bigger picture and that positivity that your community needs, you need to stretch your brain in new ways. And so whether, you know, it doesn't, I always encourage my husband to sign up for acting classes. Not his thing, but he's an engineer, but he does woodworking, right? And photography and all these other sorts of things. And so I highly encourage you to just, even if you're not good at something, take a class or join a meetup group that is completely different than what you're used to. And it's the most uncomfortable feeling, but it is where growth happens in that discomfort.
Yeah, that's really great. So what leadership skills have you learned, do you think, from pursuing this acting journey?
Through acting specifically, you know, they were really big in our acting class about listening. To be an actor, really what it is just, you're just listening. Because if your scene partner is delivering lines and you're not listening to the lines, you're not going to know how to respond. If you're too busy thinking about what am I going to say next? What is the next thing I have to deliver? How am I going to deliver my lines? You miss the natural connection that happens between you and your scene partner. So your scene partner may have a set of lines that they were supposed to deliver really happily. And then they, for some reason, make a creative decision to deliver those lines in a sad way. You can't respond the way you had planned, right? You have to then respond to them with your same lines in an emotionally appropriate way that makes sense for the scene. So listening is at the core of acting. And I tend to be a very fast thinker and a very emotional and responsive person. So I don't brood on anything. I don't hold grudges. I am very on the sleeve. If I'm happy, you'll know I'm happy. If I'm upset or frustrated, you'll know right there. My business partners will tell you that. And so what acting has kind of taught me to do is to read the scene better, right? Is look at, okay, in this meeting, is there people who maybe have something to say but are holding it back? Or maybe I'm responding too quickly or too aggressively and not matching the mood. And you know, that's something I still am not perfect at by any means, but I have developed an awareness of because of my work doing scene study.
Well, what you've just described so eloquently is communication. I mean, it's just communication and building relationships. And, You know, I think that's that goes across every profession or every interaction we have as humans, that, you know, knowing how you come across and how to, you know, anticipate what the other person is needing or wanting, or you know, just tempering your response due to how they react. And then also, if you know something about them, what language resonates with them, and how do you speak to them in that way? So, I mean, you just said in an acting explanation what I do in my executive coaching of helping people how to communicate.
So. Mm-hmm. It's not easy because emotions are a strong driving factor, right? Emotions are chemical, right? You have this, you disagree with someone, so you have this adrenaline pumping and you want to just say your point. And I'm so guilty of that. But when you actually learn to read the scene and slow down and have empathy for the other person, it changes the way you communicate.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I hear in your voice that you want to facilitate change in PT and healthcare in general. So would you say you're optimistic about seeing that change in the future?
Yes, definitely. We've had so many applicants to Movement X, so many interviews. We've brought on so many great physical therapists. And we've had probably, I'm going to estimate about 400 applicants for providers, and we've accepted about 40. So we're really selective in how we're growing and strategic with how we're growing. But we've gotten to know a lot of PTs, even those who don't ultimately join us, and we've listened to their frustrations, and we've listened to their hopes, and we've listened to their ideas. And there's still so much enthusiasm out there. And I think we're hitting this critical mass of the living expenses of the modern day, well, I'll say millennial, probably that's the age range we're looking at, based on the student debt, and then with the general salary of a new PT, we are at a critical point where it's either going to work or it's not going to work. And I think you see this generation of PTs coming in who are like, this has to work. I just graduated. I'm very passionate about this field. It has to work. So they're looking at alternate ways to practice within the field, new ideas on how to improve the health of society that don't involve just a traditional 9-to-5 job out of a clinic. And so I have a lot of optimism about the future because of this like pressure cooker that so many of my peers are in. It's either, you know, just do better or leave the profession. And so Movement X is desperately trying to help people not just leave the profession. So I'm really optimistic. But with that said, I think it's on all of us to realize that there is a real problem, and we can say, just suck it up and work harder and be happy that you have a job. Yeah. It's not going to last. It's just not going to last very long. That's kind of an old rhetoric at this point. So I'm cautiously optimistic for sure.
That's great. Now, you know, I would say that if you asked most PTs, that they would think that they're really good at personal interactions with their patients. So what is missing, and how do you optimize that relationship and turn it into a positive outcome for their health? Because I think you said in the patient experience that we probably aren't as good as that as we could be. So what's missing there? Because a lot of PTs, I would think if you asked them, they'd say, oh, you know, I have personal relationships with my patients and I do it all day long. And yeah, I'm good at that.
Yeah, I think at a baseline, we're all passionate, compassionate and passionate individuals, which is why we got into this profession to begin with. With that said, I think the structure of physical therapy, the infrastructure, doesn't allow for the full personalized relationship that is actually possible. And I say that because, you know, a patient comes in, you have, if you're lucky, 45 minutes one-on-one with them, most likely less than that. And they have ankle pain and you have to report all these outcomes to insurance to justify care, as we have to get every little goniometer measurement, which takes 15 minutes in of itself. You don't have time to realize that person's husband just left them and they lost their job during COVID and they're alienated from their kids, right? Those are huge societal factors towards outcomes, and not even to mention the economic status of an individual and how that affects health outcomes. So when you have these time constraints and these requirements that you have to report to insurance just to get paid, you cannot develop a personal relationship. It's just impossible. Let alone, unless you're truly an outstanding individual, do you personally have the bandwidth to absorb those emotions and process those emotions and then act upon those factors as a single PT seeing 50 plus patients a week? Like, is that within any of our emotional bandwidth? So I think we go into the profession with these really rosy hopes that we're going to make 50 best friends a week, or, you know, that's an exaggeration, but just really connect with our patients. And then we're forced to not because of the confines of our current practice.
Well, let me.
I feel very. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, let me challenge you a little bit on that.
Yeah.
In the sense that if you look at healthcare and you look at the providers that give healthcare, you know, in this country, I would make the argument that PTs probably have more time than any healthcare provider there is to be with patients and get to know them. And mm-hmm. if you can agree with that, then shouldn't we be the masters at it?
Yeah, amen. Totally, we have more time than anyone. Kinda. There are PT clinics that I know of that have 15-minute appointment times, and we make fun of physicians who have 20-minute appointment times. So we're not perfect by any means. With that said, we do hypothetically have the most time to bond with our patients. But are we really the best at taking these cognitive and social and economic factors and evaluating how they affect the pain our patients come in on? I think some of us are really good at that. In fact, I think we're coordinating mental health providers. We're coordinating primary care physicians to help aid in that holistic patient care. But I don't think we're as good as we think we are.
Yeah, no, and I would take it back too. I'd get back to that thing we talked earlier about is kind of the achiever mindset where, you know, we have a goal, we're going to do this, we put them on a plan, and we're going to do that. And then we're probably not as good as that creative right brain thinking side. That sometimes you just need to sit there and listen to somebody's issues.
Yeah. Yeah. And does insurance pay you to sit there for 45 minutes and listen to somebody's history? You can finagle it, you know, but is it what this insurance system is designed to do? It's definitely not. So this is more than a PT issue, right? This is a whole fee for service and insurance reimbursement, and et cetera, issue. But at the end of the day, you know, I've had patients who have come in for one visit. I've listened to their entire health history, wrote down a timeline of when they had what, when they did what, and how this treatment affected this. And then they go home with that piece of paper of their entire history. And they're like, wow, I know what I need to do. I don't know if I need you. I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But is that manual therapy? Is that therapeutic exercise? Is that email? Like what, you know, so it's just, there's a conflict in the way that we should be treating patients and the way the system is designed to do so.
You mean there's no CPT code for listening?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay. You know, if you could pick one thing that would just give you great joy that would happen over the next year, what would it be?
Oh, anything related to PT, I'm assuming.
Or you take it either way you want, or take both.
My husband let me get a second dog. That would be the best thing. But all jokes aside, I've been pushing him for a year now, but no, all jokes aside. Wow. You know, I think it would involve the people in my business. If we could, and this is maybe a magic wand item, but every one of our PTs and employees have a goal in their career and their life, whether it's have a second baby, buy a house, start to do leadership roles, see more patients, see less patients, whatever it is. If we could wave a magic wand and get professional and life goals to be accomplished within one business, I would be thrilled. And let me elaborate on that a little bit, because I think most companies, not all companies by any means, but most companies bring somebody on and then they look at their clinical and professional goals. What continuing education do you want to do? What certifications do you want? You know, do you want to manage a clinic one day? But at MoveNX, what we look at is, okay, what are those goals? Of course, but also what are your financial goals? What are your family goals? How do you want to design your life? And how can MoveNX help you design the most optimized life? And so if I can look at all my employees and say, you have the ultimate lifestyle design and MoveNX has helped you get there, I would be so overwhelmed with joy.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So how do you keep your passion stoked and not let it wane?
I would be lying to you if I didn't say it's natural for it to wane. There's absolutely... I don't even know if I've told my business partners this, but I think it's something every entrepreneur deals with. Is there's definitely days where you're on a high, you're having a really good week in business, everything's going as you want, the operations are smooth, people are interested in you. And then you have weeks where all you're doing is fighting fires and everything's wrong and people think you have a magic wand and you can fix everything. And those Those are weeks where I'm like, what am I doing? Did I make the right decision? But as you get more specific, as you grow a better team, as the business starts to grow beyond just you as an individual, those days become less and less. And so what I've had to do as the operations officer for my business, that a lot of those fires do land on me, is look at the bigger picture. You know, you ask that question, what would make you happy? And it's the success of our people. And so I can get through the days where all I'm doing is fighting fires, because I know what I'm doing is helping the people who are so passionately involved with our organization. So I think for any entrepreneur, you just have to look at the big picture and make sure that even if there's days that stray, you are taking the next best step in getting to where you want to be.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I can remember throughout my career, every once in a while, you get a little cocky and you think, man, things are going so good and things are going great. And that's about the next day when some big ball comes down and crushes you and you're like, oh, no, how am I going to do that? So I do think there's waves and there's up and downs. And, you know, it's just something that we just have to manage, you know, and things don't go perfect. And I do think that in the business world, too, that people expect to, if I do this and I do that, then it will be perfect or it will be smooth. And there's a great book that I love, and the name of the book is Say Yes to the Mess. And the bottom line of the book is there's going to be chaos, there's going to be things that happen, and there's going to be things that just go, you know, on and on, and you just have to embrace it and say that I'm going to do the best I can and I'm going to try and make this work the best I can, but I can't expect perfection and I can't expect to be always smooth.
100%. You know, I do say I thrive in chaos, which is true. But at the end of the day, these things build up, right? One thing that, let's say on a Monday, wasn't a big deal. There's a little insurance issue, no big deal. Tuesday, it snowballs a little bit and it stresses you out. Well, 3 months from now, that same little thing that was not a big issue is now a hot button item. And it becomes a sort, just a thorn in your side. And so as an entrepreneur, you have to identify, okay, what are these thorns that are starting to get me jaded or starting to get me burnt out or stressed? And how do I address them right now so that they don't continue to fester? So I actually have this running list. Steve, I've never told anyone this, but I have this running list and it's called Pangs of Anxiety. And every time I check an email or a Slack or a phone call or a text or anything that causes that little feeling in my stomach to be like, oh, I don't want to do this right now. Or, ooh, this causes me stress for some reason. I write it down. And then at the end of the day, I go back to it and say, okay, what did I do to deal with this pang of anxiety? And why did it come in the first place? And so that way I start to identify where my anxieties and stresses are coming from. And then actually at the end of the day, you look at it and it's really, they're not big deal things. At the moment, they feel huge. But when you reflect on them, they're really not that big of a deal. So that's been a really helpful strategy for me.
No, that's a great strategy. As a matter of fact, I deal with, or I tell clients that I work with that, you know, usually we can identify, if we work at it, something that I would call it triggers us, you know, sets mm-hmm. us off and gets us angry or gets us, you know, pissy or, you know, whatever. And if you know what it is, if you identify it, like 50% of it goes away. If you just, mm-hmm. you know, like mine is, I'll just give you a little insight here. Mine is considerate. When I think people are not considerate and, you know, it triggers me. And so if I say to myself, why am I triggered right now? Why am I kind of, you know, uptight, whatever? And I say, oh, it's because that person was not considerate. And if I identify it, then like 50% of it goes away.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yep. And that's part of that, not letting a wound fester, right? It's really easy to blame things on the universe or blame things on other people or just, you know, be a victim in your situation. But you, in any situation, business, personal, whatever, you have to take ownership and it's only on you to decide your happiness and what's the next step for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now in your role as COO of Movement X, how do you use your leadership skills to have the most impact for the company?
Yeah, I'm a very organized person in a way. I'm not actually type A, which would surprise a lot of people. I'd say I'm type B plus, whatever that is. But I think I can look at the entire organization. We have a people department where all of our providers and our employees and our team, exec team sit. We have a marketing department where, you know, all of our online advertising and email newsletter and storytelling and website sits. And then we have more of like the executive team, our finance department, looking at our budget and our payroll, et cetera, et cetera. And so, and then we have our insurance team, of course, that are billing. And all of these things do not operate in silos. All of these have a lot of overlap. And I don't have a specific team. I'm not a member of the marketing team or of the product development or the software team. But I look at all of them like a wheel and make sure that each cog in the wheel is connecting. So if the people department is missing something that the marketing department is doing, it's my job to draw those conclusions. And because I'm a very organized person, I think I have the infrastructure to be able to implement those systems. Now, the one thing I'll say is I am also a co-founder. So I'm not just a COO and a co-founder. And a lot of the business people out here will understand that when you start a business and it's yours to grow and run, there's a million different hats you're wearing. So, you know, you're the customer service person. You are at some point the billing person. You're the phone person. You're everything. And so for the past 3 years, I've been wearing a ton of hats. And hopefully my goal in the coming years is to start taking off those hats, putting other people in seats where they're more strongly positioned for, so that I can be even better at my COO role and really focus on the growth and optimization and scalability of MovementX.
Yeah, that's definitely the goal. That's great. So, Keaton, usually at this time in the interview, I ask a common question to all my guests, and that question is, in relation to leadership, what is a pearl of wisdom that you could leave us with today?
You cannot be a leader on your own. You just can't. You can be an entrepreneur on your own. You can be impactful and inspiring on your own, but a leader means that you have, I hate this word, but followers, or that's not even the right word. Let's say upcoming leaders in your footsteps. And so your ultimate goal as a leader is to improve the lives of the people around you. But you can't become an optimized leader unless you're following somebody else's example and learning from other people. So you have this circle around you of people that you're learning from and people that you're empowering. So it's not like you're one person standing in front of a crowd preaching your way to all these other people, right? It's this network, this chain of leadership that you're developing in front of you and behind you that really makes you the strongest leader. So if you feel like you're siloed in your business or siloed in your professional development, go meet people. Just find people who are better than you, because you are the sum of the people around you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, throughout my career and as all the people I interview on this program, I think the best leaders really do say and live a life of they're always learning. They have mentors. They have other people they talk to. They're always growing by, you know, reading or listening to podcasts or talking to other people. Their goal in their business is to produce new leaders and develop other leaders. And so I think with that kind of a mindset, good things can happen for sure.
Agreed. And then one other thing I'll say, and this is maybe less leadership, but just more the road to success. If I had kids and I had to tell them, these are two things you should do just to be successful at a job. You don't even have to be good at your job, but just to be just on the right path to success is just be responsive and be enthusiastic. You don't have to know anything, but if you respond quickly to emails, if you return people's call, if you're upfront about communication, you've got a huge check mark in my book. And then if you're enthusiastic, you don't have to be the most passionate person in the entire world to see the passion in someone else and then get excited for them, right? So be responsive, be enthusiastic, and you're going to go really far.
Well, Keaton, this has been a real pleasure. I mean, your passion is infectious, that's for sure. And am I going to see you on the red carpet one of these days?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, it could be
probably
the red carpet.
Not.
It
Maybe
could
the
be
the red carpet of PT.
That's what I was going to say. It might just be in leadership or business accolades and not acting. But I do think it's a really interesting piece that we talked about. So thanks again for being here today. It's been a pleasure getting to know you and seeing you grow through the profession and do some exciting things as well. So keep up doing what you're doing. Like I said, it's fun to see, and you're somebody that's fun to be around. So appreciate all you do for our profession, and I wish you the best of luck with MovementX and all the other goals you have for your
career.
Thank
you, Steve. I remember, I'll give you a little props as well. I remember just being a youngster at House of Delegates. I don't remember what year, but I knew who you were just through APTA and being in the Northwest. And you tapped me on the shoulder and I turned around and I was starstruck. And you probably didn't know that. And you said, hey, would you be interested in coming to Grand Sessions? And I think that was like such a high to be like, oh my God, you know, Steve Anderson, the CEO of TAI and the founder of Grand Sessions. Like, I was just starstruck. And so it's because of people like you that I've surrounded myself with that I feel like I can even be proud of the accomplishments I have to date. So thank you as well.
Well, thanks for the kind words. But, you know, sometimes you just have a feel about people, and definitely had that with you. So good luck and enjoy the rest of the summer, and we'll see you down the road.
Thanks, Steve.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. To listen to all my interviews, subscribe to Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and many other popular podcast platforms. Some of these interviews are on video, and you can search YouTube for Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson. You can also access the entire library of interviews on my website, orange.coaching.com, and that is orange.coaching.com, and go to the Media Center and click on Podcasts or Video Gallery. You can also enter the website from pilpodcast.com.